Good morning, everyone. Looks like we don't have quite a quorum yet, Madam President, so we'll just wait a couple minutes.
Okay.
Thank you. Morning. Aishwarya, I am. So whenever you're ready, Madam President, you're welcome to start the meeting.
Okay. So I'd like to call this Arizona State Board of Optometry meeting today, September 1st, to order at 9 a.m. Roll call. Is Ms. Chavez present?
Yes. Yes, I am.
If you'd like to call roll, that would be wonderful.
Yes, thank you. Board members, Kelly, Dr. Moffitt.
Present.
Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones. Dr. Mastorius.
Present. If you didn't hear me, this is Dr. Jones.
Oh,
okay. Present.
Thank you.
Dr. Mastorius, present.
Thank you. Dr. Chris Agus. Dr. John Chris Agus or Agus, I'm sorry.
August,
sorry. Yes. Dr. August. Yes. Chris Agus. No.
Dr. Go ahead.
Okay. Ms. Whalen.
Did you call Dr. Hunter, Ms. Chavez?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Did you?
I'm here.
Okay. Thank you. Hello, Dr. Hunter. Thank you.
Margaret Whalen is present.
Thank you. Mona Baskin?
Present.
And Veronica Chavez is here. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item C, President's report. I'd just like to pass along, Ms. Whalen and I had a meeting on July 30th with the Arizona Auditor General's office, where we were updated on the status of the audit as well as answered some questions that have arisen during the audit. As a reminder, the audit is being performed to see if the board is meeting its objectives. They are anticipating at this point that the field work will be complete by August 31st, and the report writing will ensue after that. Next item, I'd like to read the board meeting statement of purpose real quick. A license to practice optometry in this state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice and profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general, assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrists and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the Consumer Information Act. Link. Agenda item D, review and discussion of possible action on investigative reviews and complaints. Are there any conflicts of interest among the board members with any of the reviews that or the complaints we're reviewing today?
No.
No.
Okay. No.
None here also. As this is a virtual and telephonic meeting, I'd like all in attendance to preface their comments with their name so all the participants know who's speaking first. And in the event you are a patient in attendance, please refer to yourself with your initials for privacy purposes. Are there any respondents present today or counsel?
Yes.
I see you, Dr. Huttenhoff. Are there any other respondents here?
Dr. Joseph Gilbuena is present.
Okay. Any counsel?
No.
No.
Any patients present or complainants present? Okay, I hear none. So we'll start with agenda item D1, Dr. Joseph Gilbuena, IR number 202201. Can I ask Dr. Jones to provide a summary, please, for Dr. Gilbuena's case?
Yes, this is Dr. Jones. Let me get to it. Okay. This is IR 202201. Oh, wait, I'm the right one. Yes, I am. The complainant is MR, patient was ER, and I think it was a husband complaining for a wife. He says here his wife went to get her annual exam. She didn't need contacts as she still had some last year, told the doctor of this. He advised that this was okay, but that she still required a contact lens exam at that time, that that was still required, and she would be paying for that portion for that. After being her glasses, she would be advised, I guess she would be advised that she would be charged for the glasses and the contact lens exam, even though she wasn't even getting the contacts. And he felt like that they were double dipping with the exam and advising exams after required when they were requiring payment. And then he lastly said that his wife had the infant son with her and they were going to dilate her eyes. She asked if it would be okay to drive. They said yes, but I guess afterwards she felt like this wasn't untrue, that they didn't provide any eye protection for the son. And that's the gist of that complaint.
Okay. And I'll just ask one more time, is the patient present in this complaint? Okay. So Dr. Gilbuena, if you'd like to respond or provide any additional information to that which we've received, this is your opportunity to do so. Dr. Gilbuena, do you have any comments? You may be on mute. We're not hearing anything from you. I wonder if we lost his connection. Okay, so hearing no comments, we'll move on to board discussion then. Do any of the board members have any comments to offer regarding this complaint?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, I do hear you, Dr. Gilbuena. Would you like to address the board?
Yeah.
Okay, this is your time to do so.
Thank you so much. Okay. So the patient presented to my office for her yearly eye examination, expressing that she intended to continue use of her contact lenses, though still had some remaining from the previous year. I'd explained to her that for safety reasons, we'd still need to evaluate the safety and appropriateness of the contacts which she consented to. I did the exam, the necessary calculations, generated the new prescription. Although it was just a small change, I told her she may continue use of her previous contacts and order more when she's ready. As she checked out with the optician up front, I overheard her expressing surprise at the contact lens fitting fee, and I approached her again, explaining that the service had been performed, as we discussed in the exam room, and that the fee was correct, later confirming that the discounted fee we charged her was the exact same as was charged the year before for the same service. I'd later come to learn that she called our office partway through her drive home because she did not have the dilation sunglasses, and my staff offered apologies at that time, but I myself did not learn of that until sometime after. The patient's husband called soon after, surprised at the contact lens fitting fee, and I left him a voicemail explaining that I had reviewed the codes and charges and that everything had been billed correctly for the services that were rendered.
Okay. Does that complete your comments, Dr. Galbuena?
Yes.
Thank you. So then I will open this up for board discussion at this time. Comments from the board or thoughts? I'll start with my impressions, and then we can discuss it amongst the board members further. When reading this complaint and the record, if I have a patient tell me that they have contact lenses from the previous year and they don't wish to be fit this year, they have enough for whatever reason, maybe they use their contact lenses on a very limited basis, then I just move on with the eye exam and don't pursue contact lens further. So in this case, this is an elective procedure, a contact lens fitting. If the patient declines it, in my opinion, this is not something that the doctor performs anyway or expects to receive charges if they do. So it seemed clear that they declined, or that the patient in this case, ER, declined a contact lens fitting, and therefore it shouldn't have been performed or certainly shouldn't have been billed. And so that's my thoughts on it. I'll ask Dr. Hunter. Dr. Hunter, how do you view this?
I feel that that's kind of how I would handle it in my office. What I also comes to mind is that if we don't do that and 6 months later she runs out of contacts and doesn't have a current contact prescription, the visit at that point is probably going to be more than what she would have paid 6 months prior at this exam that we're talking about. And so that, you know, that discussion doesn't sound like it happened, but yeah.
So I agree. I think that Dr. Galbuena meant well when he did the fitting, knowing that her prescription would be expired and that the prescription then the patient would have to re-present to clinic to obtain a up-to-date prescription. But it's an assumption, and that certainly needs to be discussed, and the patient's consent is required. So, Dr. Mastoras, I'll ask, how do you view this?
I agree. I felt like there was sort of a little bit of a gray area because in her chief complaint, she did mention, or it was written, that she was having a little trouble with the left eye. And so the reason I say gray area is that even if you don't do the contact lens portion, the patient does want to talk about how they're doing in their contacts. So it's just hard to kind of toe the line. But I would say that because the patient, at least she says that she had not asked for that part of the exam, then I would not have done it as well. So.
Dr. Jones, your thoughts?
You know, I've come across this situation many times also. And yeah, I just don't do it. But then I tell them, hey, when you come back, we're going to have to do it because it's going to be expired. And then yes, it might be where I have to reprint refraction also, because it's been a while and, you know, things like that. So, I mean, I think definitely it's a gray
area, I think I would have just probably not done anything and, you know, and had them back or just let her come back, you know, later on. The dilation glasses, I think that was just an oversight and that's unfortunate. I do think that, you know, those should be offered and we do that at the end of the exam to everybody that's been dilating. But, you know, probably make a motion.
I'm sorry, this is Dr. Gilwina again. May I correct a couple statements that the board has made regarding this case?
So this is generally not a time for discussion with you, Dr. Gilwina, but I'll ask if you have anything you'd like to say. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I would like to add that the patient's contact lens prescription had expired by 89 days at the time of the examination, and that she did consent to the sitting in the exam room, but reversed that decision when she found out up front that there would be a fee associated with it.
Okay. So we were aware that it had already expired, the prescription had expired. It looked like from the complainant, I'll just state that she expressed, or at least the husband on behalf of the wife expressed that she did not want a contact lens fitting. So I agree, this all looks like a bit of a gray area. Dr. Jones, I think you were in the process of making a motion, if you'd like to continue.
Yes, I mean, I think that, you know, if this is probably mostly a miscommunication, but I do want to make the motion to dismiss the complaint due to the lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act. You know, would it be in his best interest to, you know, reverse the fitting fee? I'm going to leave that. That's my motion.
Dr. Mastores, I second the motion.
Okay. So we have a motion to dismiss the complaint for lack of violation and a second. Is there any further discussion? Go ahead.
Say that, you know, everybody hates forms, but this is a really great reason to have a form that the patient has to sign prior to being seen, being aware of the fees. Thank you.
That's an excellent suggestion.
I second that, Dr. Mastores. We have a form too.
All right. So we'll vote here. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote to dismiss the motion?
Aye.
Excuse me, dismiss the complaint. Dr. Mastores?
I vote aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So that's 4-0 to dismiss. Motion is dismissed. We'll move on to Dr. Huttenhoff's complaint, IR number 202203. And I'll ask again, in this instance, is the patient present? Okay, I hear no response. Dr. Huttenhoff, if you'd like to take an opportunity. Oh, excuse me. Let me just first provide a summary in this case. Patient PH saw Dr. Huttenhoff on April 15th, 2021 for new onset floater slashes in the left eye as well as a blurred spot in the vision. This was persistent for 4 days at the time. Dilated exams suggested an uncomplicated PVD and Dr. Huttenhoff released the patient for a year. Patient saw his primary care 5 days later, and she suggested an MRI to rule out a neurologic cause, which incurred an out-of-pocket expense of $1,430. Approximately 1 month later, the patient saw a nurse practitioner for his blood pressure, which he believes was elevated due to the MRI contrast agent. On July 13th, the patient saw Dr. Garrity, who's a retinologist in Tucson, and was treated for a retinal tear in the left eye. The patient in this case would like his costs reimbursed from Dr. Huttenhoff. And so that's my summary. Dr. Huttenhoff, if you would like to take a moment to address the board and respond to this complaint, this is your opportunity. Oh, you're on mute, Dr. Huttenhoff. We can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to sit in on this meeting and take part in the discussion. So this patient called new onset flashes floaters. We got him in same day. As always, we did a dilated eye exam, and I used biomicroscopy to take a thorough look in both eyes, as well as extended BIO. Took a very thorough look at his peripheral retina and saw no holes, tears, or detachments. His complaint was a C-shaped floater, and I did see a Weiss ring in the vitreous that seemed to account for his complaint. At the end of the exam, I had a lengthy discussion with him that there was no concerns with the retina, that it was just some normal changes in the vitreous. And as always, I tell them, if you have any new floaters, flashes, veil or curtain, anything unusual, to come back immediately, same day, we'll get you and take another look. And so that was explained to him. We had a lengthy discussion as was documented in the chart. As with every patient, I take all these complaints very serious, especially anything that could be a retinal complication. And we take a thorough amount of time with them to make sure. And I probably see one or two holes or tears a week, and definitely some retinal attachments as well. When we see that, we get them off same day to retina, if possible, to have treatment. And this case was no different. So I did spend a good amount of time with this patient. 3 months later, he saw Dr. Garrity in town, and he did see a little retinal tear. And as we know, things can change in a matter of days, especially months. But he did not come back to the office, and I heard no follow-up with him until the complaint was presented to the board. I talked to our office manager, and she looked into it, and she looked at the extensively at the insurance, and the insurance paid the $91. He didn't pay anything. So she said, if we did refund it, it would go back to the insurance, which she said wouldn't make any sense, and she's not going to do it. So in fact, the patient paid nothing out of pocket. So there's, in this case, nothing to refund to him.
Okay. Does this summarize your response?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So then I'll open this up to the board for further discussion. Any comments, Dr. Hunter?
I have no comment.
Okay. Dr. Jones?
It seems like it was well-documented chart. I mean, everything looked fine. I mean, this happens a lot. The only thing I would have commented is that a lot of my patients that come in with a new onset of flashes and floaters, I do have them back in about 4 to 6 weeks just to kind of double check that, because there are things that are happening, and sometimes that can cause the floater, it can cause a tear or a time. And so I do usually follow up, and there's been a few instances that I do find something at that next appointment. So that's my comment about everything.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Dr. Mestoras, any comments?
Yes, I agree with what Dr. Jones just said. I thought the chart was well documented. He was dilated. You looked. Sometimes patients' perception of time can be altered. The patient did say that they felt like it was a very quick exam, although through the chart, I can see that you probably spent a lot of time with him. I also have had patients who have a PVD who can tear the next day. So I think the only error that I see here is that you should have scheduled that 4 to 6 week visit, instead of a year. 3 months later, he had a tear. If it was fixed that day, it was probably laser. So it was probably a small tear, which is good. Whether that's relevant or not, but I think the only error that was made was the follow-up. Thank you.
I completely agree. That was my impression as well. I actually looked some of this up just for all of us on the board, and also for you, Dr. Huttenhoff, that most of these acute PVDs at presentation, 14% of them, when they're a complicated PVD, the tear is present at presentation, and only 3.4% are present or present after presentation. So most of the time, for all of our benefit, it is there the first time we look. However, we can't say with definity whether that tear was present at his initial exam or not, but that is why I think there's a standard of care issue with the follow-up in this case. A 4 to 6 week follow-up to recheck the retina is absolutely indicated. So if you left yourself open anywhere, I think that's where it is. Other than that, you're not responsible for the actions of the primary care looking for a neurologic cause and out-of-pocket expenses incurred after their visit. You don't know what was said at that visit. Don't know why the MRI was ordered precisely. And it's certainly not indicated based on what the patient presented with you. So those expenses, of course, aren't your responsibility. But your recall, I think, leaves you open. Had there been another complication associated with this, a more lasting one, then you might have had trouble because of that. So those are my thoughts as well. I actually think it's appropriate to issue a letter of concern in this case that the standard of care for a retinal complication for a recall should have been anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, pretty much the standard. And those are my thoughts on that. So other thoughts amongst the board members?
This is Dr. Jones. I'm sorry, Dr. Mistores. Yeah, I agree. Kind of wondering how to make a motion on this case. And I do think that is appropriate. Go ahead, Dr. Mistores.
So, Dr. Moffitt, were you making a motion?
for a letter? I will, or you are welcome to, if you'd like to proceed.
Go ahead. But yeah, letter of, I forget the term.
Letter of
concern.
Yes.
So, Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes, absolutely.
I heard your motion you'd like to issue a letter of concern for falling below the standard of care.
On a retinal follow-up. Yeah, on a retinal.
Appropriate recall for a retinal issue.
Yes.
Thank you, Mark. Where did you want the follow-up portion to go? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Would you restate that and I'll tell you?
Sure. Letter of concern for falling below the standard of care for lack of appropriate recall for retinal issue.
For a retinal complication.
Complication. Mm-hmm. And as a reminder to the board members and the public, this is a non-disciplinary action and is not reportable to the National Practitioner Data Bank.
Dr. Mestores, I second the motion.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right, so we'll vote on issuing a letter of concern regarding Dr. Huttenhoff's recall on his retinal patient. So, Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So motion passes 4-0. So move on now to agenda item D2.
Can I do a quick side note?
Margaret, is it appropriate?
Dr. Huttenhoff, it's not really appropriate at this time.
Okay.
If you want to make it during the calls of the public, you're more than welcome. That should be just closer to the end of the meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Huttenhoff.
Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah. Agenda item D2, Dr. Nevzat Kaliskanalp, IR number 202202. Do we have either the patient in this case or Dr. Kaliskanalp present? Okay. I hear no response. Dr. Mestores, I'll ask you to provide a summary in this case.
Okay, so this is IR number 202202 for Dr. Kaliskanalp. Sorry if I butchered that. And patient SJ. Just get to it. SJ, yes. This was, exam was performed on May 13th, 2021 at a LensCrafters. The patient had been seen there a year prior. He found that there was a new doctor and a new staff. His initial impression was not good based on a HIPAA violation where the tech or whoever announced a medication he was taking in the waiting room. It was his first bad impression. Next, the tech had difficulties doing the air puff test. When he finally got to the exam room, he found the doctor to be rough and have a poor bedside manner. for some reason he didn't want to give him the RX. The patient stopped the exam and walked out. The insurance was billed and the patient cannot use it elsewhere. And so he'd like to be refunded for that. It does appear that the doctor responded that he did not see that patient. And it looks like we have no further information.
Okay, thank you. And I think Margaret has some information regarding follow-up and the treating physician here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. As you can see by the email submitted by Dr. Callis Canalp, he did not treat this particular patient. So I did notify the patient who stated that he actually filed a complaint against the owner of the medical group, which is Dr. Callis Canalp. But I told him, you know, since we don't license the entities, it's best to open the complaint against the treating physician. So I have been informed that Dr. Andrew Abella is the treating doctor. So I am opening a separate complaint for Dr. Abella's response. And Dr. Callis Canalp would not really be part of either complaint. So if the board wanted to dismiss for lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act, I think that would be appropriate.
Okay.
I can make that motion.
Not the treating physician, yes.
This is Dr. I'll make that motion to dismiss the complaint due to lack of, I guess, dismiss the complaint against Dr.
Callis Canalp because he was not the treating physician.
For not treating this patient due to the lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Dr. Mastoris, I second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, so we'll vote on a motion to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Callis Canalp as he was not the treating physician. Let's do a roll call vote here. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
Aye.
Good. And Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye. The motion passes 4-0. We'll move on to agenda item D4, Dr. Zuhair Samo. IR number 202204.
Madam President?
Yes.
Before you get started, well, thank you for announcing the case. I received a phone call yesterday from the patient who stated that she was unable to make the board meeting today and would definitely like to come before the board to be heard. So I granted a postponement to the November 3rd board meeting for this case.
Okay.
So the board doesn't need to do anything. It'll just be tabled if that's okay with you. And the patient will appear hopefully in November as well as the doctor.
Okay. All right. So then we'll just move on to agenda item E, review discussion and possible action of pending endorsement applications. Dr. Gulroop Hansra has an endorsement application in front of the board where there was some history of an arrest that was made, although I don't believe any prosecution in this case. And she also had a disciplinary action in Illinois because he had failed to obtain an ancillary license for a day fill-in type of coverage. I guess this is something that used to be done and has subsequently and reverse. This is no longer required for fill-in work. So I'd open up in front of the board. Are there any concerns about issuing a license to Dr. Hansra? Any thoughts on this history?
So this is Dr. Hunter. It seems like this all happened before this doctor was licensed in other states. Other states seemed okay with it. The explanation seemed good to me. There was some ancillary dip. He was licensed dip with that ancillary license a few times. Am I right about that? And just there was just one that was.
Yeah, there were three counts of it, right? Is that what you're asking, Dr. Hunter? Yeah, it was more than one violation.
But it seems to me it's all been resolved, and I don't have any problem with it being licensed.
Any other thoughts? All right. I agree. I saw head motions, no concerns. So I believe we need a motion then to accept Dr. Hansra's application.
This is Dr. Jones. I'll make a motion to accept Dr. Hansner's application to Arizona.
Dr. Hunter, I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, so we have a motion to accept Dr. Hansra's endorsement application to the state of Arizona. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
Yes.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Move forward to agenda item F, Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. So the following list of applicants were approved in July, the time frame July 22nd to August 30th. So you were busy, Margaret?
Yes.
That all looks very good. Any comments regarding licensees? Okay. All right. So we'll move on then to agenda item G, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of testing center for proctoring of jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R4-21-203C. San Jose State University is being offered as a test proctoring location. Any concerns with this as a location for the exam?
And from me, this is Dr. Jones.
Dr. Hunter?
No concerns.
Okay. Dr. Mastoris?
Dr. Mastoris, no concerns.
Great. Thank you. I also have no concerns. So we need a motion, correct, Margaret?
Yes, please. If
anyone would like to offer a motion.
To accept or deny this testing center.
I'll make a motion. This is Dr. Jones. I make a motion to accept the San Jose University as a testing site. Yep, San Jose State University as a testing site in the future.
Is there
Dr. Mastoris, I'll second.
Great. Any further discussion? So Dr. Jones offered a motion to accept San Jose State University as a test proctoring location. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote? Okay. Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item H, review, discussion, and possible action regarding compliance, revision, or termination of a probationary order. This is regarding David Anderson related to IR number 201-7223. So we saw some email correspondence between the practice monitor, auditor Dr. Botts, and with Margaret, there was some lack of communication, it looks like, going back to February of this year. However, Dr. Botts has suggested, and it is part of the disciplinary order, that once Dr. Anderson has met the 1 year worth of audits, which I believe we have met, it's at the discretion of the board if we want to dismiss further auditing or practice monitoring, or if we would like that to continue. He has met, I understand, Margaret, the CE requirements of his order and all other costs associated with the hearing. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the board, that's correct. I also want to state, if I could quickly, that there is only 4 months left on this probationary term of for this order. So if the board wants to work towards finalizing the order with a finalized report from the practice monitor, that would be appropriate at this time.
Okay. So shall we collect our thoughts in advance of that or wait for a final report from Dr. Botts? Margaret, any thoughts on that?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. I would ask the board for a final report from the practice monitor. At one of the meetings, forgive me, but I feel like it was either September or October meeting last year, or maybe even over the summer, one of the quarterly reports was lacking. So the board had asked for several items to be included in the next report, which would have been the first of the year report. And we didn't get that apparently for whatever reason happened in February. So I would like to actually ask Dr. Botts again to include kind of a more detailed report to finalize Dr. Anderson's case. I think that's important because if the board does not feel that he's met the requirements of the order, it could be extended. You know, there can be other things going on that the board can do. They don't have to automatically terminate the order just because that's the time frame. So I don't want the board to feel like they have to, you know, hurry up and get something done. We need to make sure that he's following the terms of the order.
Okay. So this hearing was done, I think, before Dr. Hunter and Dr. Mastores were on the board, but it's Dr. Jones and I were present at least for the hearing, and I think remember this relatively well. Are there any thoughts amongst the board members about asking for a final report from Dr. Botts, the practice manager?
This is Dr. Jones. I think that Margaret's right on because I feel like he said, oh yeah, he's doing great. You guys can, you know, file it, but he didn't show us anything. So I agree waiting for the final report and then maybe deciding at that point, if we wanted to stop, you know, monitoring him, mm-hmm. But that's just, those are my thoughts. So yes, I agree with the final report that we need something more detailed or even something besides just saying, oh, he's doing okay.
Yes.
Dr. Mastores, I was there. It was.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Mastores.
That's okay. So I also agree. And then like 4 months, that basically takes us to November, December. So hopefully by our November board meeting, we would have a final report. And I think we should follow through with that.
Okay. Dr. Hunter?
I would agree with that. If there wasn't a last audit presented, then that should be included in that final report. Clean it up, get it all tied up. So, yeah.
All right. So I think we're comprehensive in our view that we should request a final report from Dr. Botts before reviewing the status of the disciplinary order against Dr. Anderson.
Does that mean, do we have to make a motion on that, Margaret?
Yes, please, if you could just make a motion including exactly what you would like staff to request, and then a second and a vote would be great.
Okay. So Dr. Mastores or Dr. Hunter, would you like to make a motion?
I don't know what I would motion.
Madam Chair, members of the board, you could move to direct staff to obtain a final practice monitor report from Dr. Botts and include as much detail regarding the issues that we had talked about before. You know, how many records, what the status of the records was, what kind of training the doctors had, you know, any findings from the practice monitor.
Dr. Hunter?
I don't know if I could summarize that, but I would make a motion to ask for a final report, including the latest auditing information that fully details exactly what Margaret laid out there. I don't know if I can, can she fill in the blanks there?
Madam Chair, members of the board, I do have an understanding of what the board's asking for, and I think what would be sufficient for the board to make a determination is what I'll be asking for.
Okay.
This is Dr. Jones. We need to make sure that Dr. Anderson is in compliance with the statutes and rules. So that will be included in my request.
That sounds wonderful, Margaret. Is there a second?
I was going to second.
Okay.
Dr. Jones.
So we have a motion to request a final comprehensive report from Dr. Botts regarding the practice monitoring with regard to the disciplinary order against Dr. Anderson. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. So we'll move on to agenda item I, Executive Director's Report. Margaret, if you'd like to proceed.
Yes, thank you, Madam President, members of the board. Let me just pull up my report here. Item I-1, the budget and accounting update. I have two budget updates. As you recall, at the July 23rd board meeting, I did not yet have the what we call 13th month numbers. It was the end of our fiscal year on June 30th. So I do have that information now. So as of June 30th, 2021, our beginning cash balance is $473,465 with an ending cash balance of $456,874. Of course, 100% of the fiscal year was elapsed with the board spending at 86.93%. Moving on to fiscal year 22, that is our current fiscal year. As of July 31st, 2021, since yesterday was the last day of August, we wouldn't have the reports for August until about 2 weeks from now. Our beginning cash balance is $404,767 with an ending cash balance of $414,197. 8.33% of the fiscal year has elapsed with the board spending at 7.34. The appropriation for fiscal year 22, our current fiscal year, is $241,900. Last year's appropriation was $248,200. The reason for the decrease in appropriation is there are only 26 pay periods in this fiscal year, and there was 27 pay periods in last fiscal year. So anytime that happens, the Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting graciously gives us the appropriation to cover our payroll. So that's why, because we generally do have the same amount. However, I am working on our budget, and it's due today. It's about finished. The reason I wait till the last day is because I want to make sure as I look at it over the few weeks prior that I have everything that I would like to ask for to ensure that the agency, you know, continually is successful in running the day-to-day business, the operating expenses, the technology. There's always increases to that. I do have six funding issues, they're called, that I have submitted or will be submitting justifications for. I'm sorry, I didn't pull that up. Let me get that real quick. I wanted to share that with you. I think it's important, at least for the board to understand. Our appropriation is good, of course. We have a healthy cash balance, as you can see. One of my funding issues is the e-licensing. I've requested an increase of $14,000 to cover the annual cost of the e-licensing system. I am not sure that's enough because we actually just got notice that it's going to be actually $22,000, but that wasn't finalized. So some of the challenges that we have during budgeting is the numbers that we get from the other entities who we pay for services don't always have the final numbers. And this is the Salesforce system that was implemented in 2018 that you all know and love for your online system. We need some access to our funds to continue to cover the cost for the support for the online system. I also am asking for, I'm asking for an increase of $800 because the Central Services Bureau with whom we contract through an ISA, which is the Interagency Service Agreement, is establishing two new positions. So I'm not sure $800 is the correct number, but of course that's split by all the agencies that contract with CSB. And right now I think there's 54 agencies total. So in order to cover the salaries of those two positions, as well as the ERE, which is the employee related expenses. And part of the ERE is retirement, taxes, and benefits, which is a fairly substantial cost. I am asking for an increase of $1,500 of appropriation to cover the building services. So the 1740 building where we physically reside, we share services for cleaning and for maintenance and things like that. So They also have storage and we have square footage that's part of our rent. I'm not sure if the rent is increasing since COVID-19 and the new telework, the new kind of office atmosphere. A lot of agencies are not returning to the building, so I'm not sure how that's going to affect our costs. For the future, I don't have any information on it right now, so I can only submit what I have. And this is for fiscal year 2023, by the way. Since we're already in fiscal 22, nothing will be for this year, so this will be for next year's. I'm asking for an increase to appropriation to meet rising operating expenses. I'm asking for an increase of $10,000. I would like that in perpetuity. I usually ask for it in perpetuity, and I don't usually get it, but it's always nice to ask. That is so that the agency continue to function at the high level for which it needs to serve the public. And, you know, with the IT costs rising and we're having a lot of changes through the Department of Administration, a lot of contracts are going by the wayside. We've lost our Adobe Acrobat or Adobe Sign, where we used to spend $1.84 per month for the service, and now we're looking at almost $2 per envelope, they call it, which is basically per sheet, per use. So we would be looking at a substantial increase of like up to $5,000 because they have a thousand envelope minimum. My fifth funding issue is an increase to the appropriation for a scanning project. That would be a one-time appropriation increase ask. I did get a quote from DocuLinks, and also the other company name is not coming to me right now, but to scan all of our existing licensee files that were paper, to get them scanned and indexed and either integrated into Salesforce or at least migrated onto Google Drive, would cost about $6,000 to $8,000. That was the sort of the average of the two quotes. Each of them is a little bit different because they do different things. Some of them will go and weed through the files if you want them to. Otherwise, you can do that work ahead of time. So I just have to look and see what's going to be the most cost effective. And the last funding issue is an increase to the appropriation for the Attorney General's Office for Ms. Baskin's services. Historically, you know, we were represented either way and the board hasn't paid extra for the services. I mean, on and off over the years before my time, there were some ISAs. But the quote that I received from the Attorney General's office, not from Ms. Baskin, but from her office's people, was $15,000. So I will be asking for the appropriation. So if we can contribute to that, that would be great. So that would, of course, be in perpetuity as well, because we certainly want to keep Ms. Baskin. As I said, CSB has the two new positions. They also, I hope, are going to be either negotiating or restructuring new terms for the ISA, the Interagency Service Agreement. The agreement's been in place since 2017, I believe, and it just kind of renews every year. We used to have to do a new one and sign it. And then a few years ago, they said, well, let's just leave it as is until somebody wants to make a change. So with all the issues we've been having and all the turnover and the new staff and the new positions, plus we're not getting as much mail, and just there's lots of factors that go into that because our current contract is $18,000 every fiscal year for those services. And honestly, since we've gone to the credit cards and things like that, I just can't see $18,000 being a legitimate cost for our agency. Staff activity and updates, item number two. Since July 23rd, our last board meeting, 58 renewal applications have been processed, 15 new licenses issued, 61 phone calls that were on voicemail have been returned. That doesn't include the live calls. And 880 emails were answered. That is unbelievable. Only from the standpoint of we're definitely getting communication via email more than ever. I think, you know, because of COVID and some of the telework changes and however people are working, they are just communicating via email more and more, and sometimes even text. I do have a cell phone for the office that the board pays for. And so sometimes the younger doctors will say, well, can I text it to you or can you just text me back? So that's something that I'm working on, trying to do just because that's easier, I guess, for them. So I don't mind whatever means of communication is okay with me. Executive orders, active or expired. I don't really have any changes from the ones I reported on the July 23rd board meeting. There is a new one, Executive Order 2021-18, which is titled Returning to Our Principles of Governance. I'm not sure why that's the title, but it actually speaks to the vaccine mandates and how it's prohibited by city, county, municipality, school districts to mandate masks, to mandate vaccines and masks and things like that. So I won't go into it. It's kind of a big order, content-wise. So if you want to look at it, if you go to azgovernor.gov, you'll see the executive order there. Board member appointments. I do have an update. I just received a letter from the governor's office that two new board members have been appointed, replacing Dr. Chrysakis and unfortunately replacing Dr. Jones. And so we hopefully by the November board meeting, we'll have Dr. Christopher Carpenter and Dr. Stephen Cohen as new board members. Dr. Jones, I'm really, really going to miss you and I'm so sorry. And I really don't know why you weren't reappointed, but you've been a superb board member and hopefully you'll come serve on the board again. And
I appreciate it. It's been very interesting to say the least. So I appreciate and all the stuff that you do. That means that Dr. Hunter and Dr. Mestors have to talk a lot more. I was finally feeling good about talking. So
we'll miss you.
I know, just when you get situated,
I feel comfortable making motions.
But I do thank you for your service to the board. You have been an excellent board member and thank you for your support. Ms. Baskin would like to make a comment.
Yes, and Dr. Jones, this is Mona Baskin. I would also thank you for your service, your dedication, your level of expertise and professionalism and preparation. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Could you hear her okay?
Yes, okay. I could. Thank you.
Okay. So that still leaves us with two vacant public members, which I'm not happy about just because, as I always say, unfortunately, and it's not that I don't love you guys, those are the most important positions on our board. So I'm hoping that we're able to get some public members one of these days. Are there any future agenda items that anybody would like on the either November or the first of the year, next year board meeting for discussion? I feel like we've pretty much been keeping up with, trending issues and things like that. So.
Yeah, Margaret, I was just going to say if we have two new board members coming on, then we may need to discuss board member training.
Okay.
I would be up for that.
Yeah.
All right. Any other future agenda items at this time? Okay. Future board meeting dates. Our next board meeting, as discussed at the July board meeting, will be Wednesday, November 3rd, instead of Friday, and that was due to availability and quorum. So hopefully the two new board members are available. That was actually based on a previous board, so I'll send out an email once I get the loyalty oaths.
Do we want to discuss like a January meeting or anything like that? Try and pick a date for our schedules and such.
Let me pull up my calendar.
For Mona's schedule now, are we shooting for the first Friday or the second Friday?
The first Friday still.
First Friday. So the 7th of January, is that what we're looking at?
We would be looking at that, but I have a feeling that she's got a conflict. Okay. Can't see her, but she's like, Ms. Baskin, do you have
something? Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, I do apologize, but I unfortunately do have a conflict on January 7th, but the rest of the year looks like I should be all yours for that first Friday of of every month. I know by statute you're required to have at a minimum 6 meetings, and I know that, you know, sometimes you go over. So I do apologize for that conflict on at the beginning of 2022.
So based on that, Madam Chair, would you entertain Wednesday, January 5th? Ms. Baskin, are you available on that?
Yes.
Ms. Baskin is available on the 5th. And it's just tentative. We can absolutely revisit it, especially with 2 new board members, hopefully, who will attend the November meeting.
I would just ask, there isn't another, and I say, so I can do the Wednesday, but I don't know how the other board members feel about this. And generally, when we come on, we're anticipating Friday meetings, and so our schedules may have been somewhat revised to accommodate that. Are there any other Fridays in January that Ms. Baskin is available, and does is that better for the rest of the board members?
Does the following Friday you have presentation?
Right, the 21st.
Or can we skip January and just do a February meeting?
We can do that. I don't prefer it because, you know, if our last meeting is in November, then it's 2 months before the next meeting. But but we definitely can. I mean, it's up to the board, to be honest with you. You guys can let me know. Ms. Baskin is available Friday, January 21st or Friday, January 28th, if that works better.
Okay. So I would say that I'm available the 5th or the 21st or the 28th is fine with me. So I would leave this open to the other board members if you have preferences.
Dr. Hunter and Dr. Mathoris, any thoughts?
I'm trying to get to my schedule.
I can do any of those.
Okay. Yeah, that 5th is a Wednesday, and then the 21st and 28th are both Fridays.
My concern is, in general, is that I block out the first Friday of every month for the year.
Yeah.
And then we pre-appoint. So, like, February, for example, I've got 500 patients already on those every Friday but that first Friday of the month. And any change causes me to have to change at least 20 patients.
I hear you, Dr. Hunter. Yeah.
You know, so the less changes, the better.
Yeah.
I,
okay.
I try to make the ones I can.
So then Friday, February 5th, Madam Chair, do we just want to keep it to the first Friday? I'm totally fine with that.
That was Wednesday the 5th, or it was Friday the 21st or 28th. So, Dr. Hunter, if you had to pick, do you have a preference?
I'm not saying I can't do that January. I want to just was making a general statement while I was trying to log on to my.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Well, you're correct. We do keep it the same time so that we don't have that issue for you.
If I heard Mona correct, after January, that she's good to go on the first Friday.
Yeah.
So, Madam Chair, if you wanted to do Friday, February 4th, then that would be our next board meeting.
And Margaret, may I jump in?
Yes.
Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, I can go back and try to work that out for that first Friday of January, which is January 7th, if I could.
If you think that's a possibility, that might be a lot easier for and plus we have 2 new board members coming on and we're deciding this for them and they're anticipating the first Friday or a Friday board meeting. So that would be great, Mona, if that's an option, if that can't work. We could choose a tentative second date if we want.
Okay. All right. I will definitely go back and explore that. I don't want to inconvenience anybody. And Dr. Hunter, I certainly am respectful and understanding of your, I had no idea your schedule was that busy. But anyway, I'm respectful of everybody. So just that legal things come up and conflicts happen. So I do apologize, but.
I understand. I really want to try and make it work, too. I'm real happy with this pre-appointing a year ahead.
Yeah.
Anyway, because then there's no vacations. Have you ever noticed that?
No, there are none.
Okay, so based on that information, Madam Chair and members of the board, we can just have our November 3rd board meeting and kind of finish this discussion at that time when hopefully the 2 new members will be present. Is that acceptable?
We'll hope for January the 7th, and then we'll choose a second date if that just doesn't work.
Okay, and I am happy to move it to the regular scheduled date in February. It's not a huge deal. I just like to kick off the year in January, but
sure.
We've definitely had years where it's been February, so it's really not a big deal. Okay. I don't want you to think that it's not.
No, but it seems like a long wait if it's a November to a February. So I understand that too. We probably want to try and stay on at least every other month schedule if we possibly can. So.
Yes, ma'am. That second January date was, and I can kind of.
Yeah. So the other January date. So if the 7th doesn't work, it was either Wednesday the 5th or Friday the 21st or Friday the 28th.
The best one for me would be the 5th. That would be the easiest one to trade to. Right. I'll kind of block that a little bit, and then we can finalize in November.
Okay. All right. And we'll try for the future board members, too, to try and get on those Fridays, because it is our schedules book a year out, like year ahead, so it can be really hard to change things. So, yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
We lost Dr. Jones.
Oh, no.
We don't have a quorum without her, so hopefully she'll log back on.
Okay.
So stand by for just a moment, Madam Chair, if you would.
Absolutely.
See if she reappears. I'm getting my phone so I can call her, see if she's having some technical difficulties or she'd had enough of that discussion. I'm not sure. But I think we are ready to move on to item J when she reappears. So if you'll stand by for just a moment, Madam Chair. Okay, if you'll excuse me, I'm just going to call her real quick.
Okay. Oh, I texted her, actually, Margaret, and she said she's trying. Her internet keeps kicking her off.
Hmm. Poor thing.
I had a feeling she was cutting in and out a little bit earlier in the meeting, so. I think I see her. Okay, she's there.
Great. Welcome back, Dr. Jones.
Thanks. I don't. My computer, the internet just kicked me off.
Praise.
All right. So we'll move on then to agenda item J, election of officers pursuant to the provisions of ARS 32-1703A. So we need to elect first the position of president for the board.
Madam Chair, members of the board, you can re-elect the sitting president or you can elect whoever you would like, except for Dr. Jones, of course.
Dr. Mastores, I motion to keep our current president, Dr. Moffitt.
Okay, so that does it, I guess.
Do you accept Dr. Moffitt?
I accept.
Okay, thank you. So then if you would call to question, Dr. Mastores, the vote?
I call it?
Yes. All right.
She needs to
vote. Yes. They have to vote. So just a roll call. So we got you made the motion, Dr. Hunter seconded. So then just ask for a roll call vote, please.
Roll call vote, Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores votes aye. Motion approved?
We need Dr. Moffitt's vote as well.
Yeah. Oh, Dr. Moffitt.
I vote aye.
Motion approved, 4-0.
Thank you.
All right.
And for Vice President, Madam Chair?
Yeah, so position of Vice President then.
I would like to nominate Dr. Mastores.
I accept the nomination.
All right, I'll second.
Dr. Hunter, would you call for the vote then, please, to elect Dr. Mastores as Vice President?
Roll vote to vote for Dr. Mastores for Vice President. Dr. Mastores?
It needs to be a roll call vote, so if you'll call each board member independently. Individually, excuse me.
I vote aye.
Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
I vote aye.
Dr. Hunter, I vote aye.
Motion passes 4-0. Congratulations, Dr. Mastores and Dr. Moffitt.
Oh, I'll call you, Darcy.
You just need to hope that Dr. Moffitt doesn't miss a meeting, because that's what I always say.
Hope and pray.
That's what you hoped, that it didn't happen?
Yes, I didn't want you to ever miss.
All right, moving on to agenda item K then, review, discussion, and possible vote on personnel issues pertaining to evaluation of executive director. Margaret provided us some evaluation forms, and
I want to address them regarding the Madam Chair, members of the board. Yes. Ms. Baskin has a couple comments. Since I didn't receive notice from Dr. Moffitt, which is not her fault, it is mine. I forgot that I had to be noticed for the discussion. So
I thought I was waiting on that from you, Margaret. I'm sorry.
You were. Okay. It's just that I somehow didn't have a copy because I had only done it one time, and that was in 2018. And I forgot that was part of the process, because historically I hadn't done it. I just would agendize it and we would have the discussion and that would be it. So, but this is a different attorney general assistant attorney general. So I appreciate your advice, Ms. Baskin. So if you'll let the board know their options.
Yes. Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, pursuant to ARS 38431.03, entitled Executive Sessions Definition A1, final sentence states that the public body shall provide the officer, appointee, or employee with written notice of the executive session as is appropriate, but not less than 24 hours. For the officer, appointee, or employee to determine whether the discussion or consideration should occur at a public meeting. So I think we were a little short on that, maintaining and adhering to that deadline. So it's advisable that the board would continue this to the November meeting. I know that Ms. Whalen has provided everybody with evaluation forms, and those could be filled out and provided so that all the sitting board members currently who are aware of her work could be participating in her evaluation. So it is, obviously meaningful and clear and a full documentation. So certainly that could be delayed until the November meeting so that we are in compliance with the notice under the statute, and also to provide for that meaningful input.
Thank you, Ms. Baskin. So, Madam Chair, members of the board, based on that information, if you would be so kind as to fill out my performance evaluation, I would greatly appreciate it. That's how I assess my success or failure or lack of success in my position. And I was a little concerned because once I found out Dr. Jones and Dr. Christakis wouldn't be on the board, I didn't want to leave it to the new board members because, of course, they don't know my work. So. If you would fill those evaluation forms out and send them to Dr. Moffitt via email, if you could. I'll collect them at the end because I need those for my records, of course, to see how I'm doing. But she can collect them all with recommendations if that would be helpful to you, Dr. Moffitt.
Absolutely. And I would appreciate if all the board members could respond in the next few days, if possible, with the exception of Dr. Christakis, who I'll send an email to.
Okay. I did send him the form. He's aware because he is obviously not here this week. So.
Okay. We'll just try to get this done quickly if we can, so we have it in anticipation of the next meeting.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
Okay, so then I guess we'll move on to agenda item L, call to the public. Are there any members of the public that'd like to address the board?
I'm present at the office.
Okay. Okay. So we'll move on then to agenda item M, motion to adjourn.
I'll make this motion to adjourn the meeting September 1st, 2021. At 10:13.
Okay.
A.M.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. So we'll vote. We've had a motion to adjourn the meeting. Dr. Hunter, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
Dr. Jones?
Did she say
aye? Did you guys get me? Aye.
I didn't hear you. Okay. All right.
My internet is being
I also vote aye. So motion passes 4-0. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.